Comic Book Legion podcast. I am your host, Clay. I am here with Mark. Today is probably going to be the worst day to talk about comics because there is...
Why?
There's no such thing as
a bad day talking about comics.
You know exactly why. Don't give me any of that. You know exactly...
I mean, we don't have to read House of Whispers, man. Like, it's okay. We don't have to talk about it. And then everything's good.
You're triggering me already. No, but...
Just look at the Christmas background where I teach. Just look at the snowman.
And the snowflakes. Oh, man. But, Mark, how you been? How you been?
Good, man. Yeah? Good. Here. I mean, my life is literally just surrounded around this house that we're building. So, it's just... I'm looking at trees getting knocked down, which is really cool. Seeing, like, these big bulldozers. But besides that...
Dude, your neighborhood has giant trees. Those pictures that you posted are huge.
Yeah, they're... Man, we got a whole bunch between, like, oaks and pine trees and some other... And, like, cherry tree. Yeah, but they're big. I mean, because that lot has been there... I guess, like, that neighborhood opened up in, like, 2007. So there's only, like, maybe three more lots where you can actually build a house. But, I mean, those are just trees that have been there for, you know, 20-plus years.
Wow.
So it's... Yeah, man. They're awesome. So I'm trying to keep as many as I can. I'm trying to keep the ones, like, if one happened to fall, it won't fall on my house. Maybe my neighbors, but whatever. I mean, that's...
Hey, as long as it's not your house, man. It's all good. Yeah.
Every man for his own. And you?
Me? I've been doing good. You know, I have been just, you know... working like every other day, and you know, I caught up on Crisis on CW, watched the very last episode. Well, there's still two more episodes gonna be in freaking January, which I think is kind of stupid to wait freaking a month until the continuation and the ending of the story. But I finished that last night. And, you know, I actually was very interested in reading these books this week. I loved Curse. We're going to talk a little bit about that. Detective was a little weird, I will say. But let's go ahead and jump into this. Do you want
to... Well, before we talk reviews, I wanted to do a Clayton hair report. How long is your hair?
I actually thought about like measuring it. If people haven't heard already, I'm actually growing my hair out to donate it. It's something that I have never done before, and I was just like, hey, let's try this. I want to try it. So
I think before people hear your thoughts on Superman, they need to at least know that you in real life are somewhat a good person, that you're donating your hair. Because right now, man, you look like Little Richard.
Oh, man, dude. No, I, last night, I was like...
Put you behind a piano, and I mean, put some grease on the hair, and you're going to look gorgeous.
Dude, I was, like, fluffing it up in the back last night to, like, mess with my wife. Because she is, like, every other day, she's like, are you sure you don't want a haircut? Like, you don't want a trim? Are you sure you want to do this? I'm like, yes, you know, I'm not going to back down. It's something that I really want to do, so I want to try it.
And no, you know what? I take it back. You don't look like Little Richard. You look like Danny McBride. You are the Latin Danny McBride.
Yeah. Oh.
Like, this is like, yeah, there it is. I got it.
Yeah. That's, I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
but yeah, I noticed that, like, it's somewhat of a mullet, but, like, I still have more on top than I do the bottom, but eventually, like, the back of my hair likes to curl up, so it's gonna look really mullet-like within the next, like, 2 months. It's gonna be crazy.
Nice.
But let's go ahead and talk comics. Do you want to save Superman first or last?
You know what? Since you are the one that's all hopped up, I think, like, once the hashtag NCBD... hashtag was valid for Wednesday, I think you immediately wanted to just post it into the Twitterverse.
Oh, you saw that?
About how much Bendis sucks ass.
You saw that?
Well, I mean, unfortunately, I have you, like, on notifications to know, like, when you tweet to see if it's something relevant to, like, the show or something like that. And then,
At
least you had the common courtesy just to put BMB.
I really thought about tagging him. I really thought about it, and I was like...
I mean, I know your goal. Your goal is to get blocked. But, I know that you really want it.
But I will say,
you didn't do a good job.
For me, I was like, you know what? My name is still technically attached to you, attached to the podcast. And, you know, I don't want, like, because I will say Clark said something about Superman 18. And he was like, I finally finished it. It's very... it made me heartfelt and tearful.
I unfortunately finished it,
you know. So, and you made me do it. I was gonna stop at page 14. You're like, oh no, the best part is the very next page. And I read it, and yeah.
You know what? Screw it. Let's go. Superman. I mean, we can't just be teasing it like this, and then we're just gonna be going later on. All right, so Superman 18. This is Brian... Michael Bendis, Ivan Reese, Joe Prado. This is the big reveal. This is what everyone has been talking. Oh, I'm sorry. And Alex Sinclair with the inks.
Colors.
Sorry. Prado does the inks. So this right here, this is the reveal. Everyone's been talking about it. I know that we've had our own discussions. And when I say we, it's kind of like the Comic Book Legion fam. In regards to what are our thoughts. And I know... that you have been very tired of Bendis kind of retreading past stories and kind of putting his own spin on it because of his lack of creativity and he doesn't know how to come up with his own stories. Did I misrepresent you?
No, not at all.
Okay. And then I think that I am a little bit more on the side where... yes, it does look like he is hitting some threads with kind of like the new Krypton story that we've mentioned with Zod, kind of like in the previous issues. Mm-hmm. I never remember if it's Superman or Action where that happened.
It's Action.
Okay. So I'm guessing that sooner or later we're going to be getting another new Krypton, maybe War of the Superman kind of thing, Superman clashing, you know, Battle for Krypton or whatever. That wouldn't surprise me. I'm more along the lines that, yes, although Superman's identity has been revealed in New 52, I think my argument was, we don't even know if that's still continuity.
Technically, it's not because of Superman Reborn. When the Superman of New 52 and the Superman of post-Crisis...
Yeah, red and blue.
Red and blue, they merged, it intertwined their timelines, and it made everything work, kinda. There were still a lot of questions, but DC basically said, Superman Reborn, you know? It is what it is.
Well, I mean, I thought they did it well, but I kind of remember that. I think my argument was that it was like, I don't even think that's continuity, so you can't really hold it against them. But even if so, because let's say people have jumped into New 52, I think the way... Well, no, you can't even use the excuse if it did, because then this kind of is pointless. So, but let's just say if you have read it... him being revealed is still that was like 4 years ago.
No, but exactly. It's 4 years ago. And here's the problem. Regardless of if it was 4 years ago, 10 years ago, 40 years ago, or 80 years ago, it's still the same concept.
It's still the same concept, but... I mean, well, first of all, I mean, when you're writing this stuff all the time, when you got 80 years of history, it's really hard to come up with something exactly fresh. So, yes, I mean, even movies nowadays, we all love sequels. I mean, if that's the case, you should be bashing CW that they're doing Crisis on Infinite Earth. Create your own freaking story.
Crisis has not been depicted in live action, though.
Yeah, but it's still a medium in terms of creating a story.
That's different. If it's... The CW shows, movies, or whatever, those are taking from the source material and adapting into a different media. This is the exact same media that's copying the exact same media.
Okay, fair enough. Either or, there's still 80 years of story that the only real thing you could be doing is having a story that's been told and kind of putting... a new, completely different spin on it. It's impossible to come up with nothing but fresh ideas. Like, well, not impossible, but it's very, very difficult. For me,
an old man like Bendis, yes.
For anyone, because it's happened before, even with before Gene Lewin was a part of it. Well, I mean, he took over after. But even so, I mean, he was still a part of... I mean, this is like the third time that his identity has been revealed.
Yes.
Yeah, so I mean, it wasn't the bashing then, but with it being done here, I actually thought it was done very well. Now, are there moments that are kind of like, okay, you get the Bendis tropes of kind of like going over the same kind of thing, and you're kind of, yeah, and harping on something. Dude, we got the point. Well, we'll talk about that in a bit. But for me, I think that this was different, because the other time was he was actually outed.
Yes, that's the big thing that Bendis is like been trying to nail on the head. Is no, this is different. This is different. This is different. No, this story hasn't been done before. No, it hasn't been done before. And the difference is, the only difference is the fact that instead of other people giving away his secret identity, he is doing it for himself. Which, okay, you changed one part of a story that's still the same.
I don't know, man. I think that this has a lot more implications in regards to like what you're doing. Because you're just saying, okay, same story. I mean, if that's the case, I mean, oh, God, Batman fights the Joker. Okay. Oh, Batman fights Riddler? Okay. I mean...
No, because here... This... I texted you this...
100%. This is a completely different thing than what happened when Lois outed him.
It...
Like, 100%.
I still don't see it. I know the difference between being outed and then... then somebody else like saying it on their own. I completely understand that.
Okay.
But let's go ahead and jump into this real quick.
Okay.
The first scene is Superman going down into the conference on Earth. He hears everybody whispering. Nobody knows why this conference has been called. Everybody's questioning it. And then it flashes back to him with the United Planets. And this whole stupid conversation starts with Adam Strange. And I will say, I apologize for anybody who wants to be an Adam Strange fan because Tom King is going to get a hold of him. This is not your way into Adam Strange. Ignore this. This is not Adam Strange whatsoever. That's all I have to say for that part. Because...
Well, see, like, I think that the dialogue could be a little wonky, but I also see where I can kind of see a reaction when he's kind of revealing himself to Adam Strange, who is a cosmic being, speaking to another pretty much supernatural cosmic being in Superman, and realizing, like, wow, this guy was just doing a regular job. Like, this guy was living life day to day like an actual human with all...
But you have to...
Now, with him actually harping... on the fact that Superman has a desk?
You have a desk? What?
I can't believe...
You
okay,
have a desk?
Well, that's what I figured.
No.
But I can definitely see, in regards to his shock, knowing that, dude, Superman is a bleeping journalist.
Yeah, but he didn't tell him.
I can see him.
He didn't tell him who he was. That was the thing.
No, but he... When he said he was a journalist, but anyway, but he did say... In regards to, like, in a very mundane, vague way, like, what he does.
But it, like, Adam Strange, if we're still talking in the continuity of New 52, with numerous gaps of time, we know that these heroes have spent time together. And it is assumed that they share at least, oh, I have a secret identity. So, for Superman to go to a fellow hero and say, hey, did you know that I have a secret identity? Like, it is literally a child speaking to a grown-up. Hey, did you know that I have a secret? I have a secret.
Well,
I can't share because I'm a secret.
I think it depends on what you consider a secret identity. I think that it's obvious that everybody will have an alter ego, but it's what do you do with your alter ego? And I think that that's what was surprising. Because even so, if you're looking at a god, and you're like, whoa, okay, this guy's literally doing mundane stuff, especially for someone like an Adam Strange that might not really understand what it's like to, like, oh, man, how many times do you speak with people that, you know, you got people that are like, oh, yeah, I love family. And you're talking about family and kids, and then other people don't want kids, and they cannot fathom the idea of, like, oh, my God, how can somebody live life with three kids? Like, it's, when you're seeing it, I mean, I can totally see a dude that's all the time in space and knows the power and who this entity is. Dude, you really just do this boring stuff and sit behind a desk? Like, that's what you do? Dude, you're Superman. I can totally see it. Now, is it annoying that he keeps on going? Sure. 100%. Even I was going to say, I'm like, my God, all right, this is like the fourth time I've heard Strange say it. Yes. But, I mean, the reaction doesn't surprise me.
It just makes Adam Strange sound like a four-year-old. And I'm looking at adults, and I'm hearing four-year-old children. Like, that's the only problem.
My God. It's the fact that you can say this, and you watch CW, when they say stuff just as stupid as this, it confounds me.
No, like,
it baffles,
like,
me.
It's, I don't see how you can read this and not read four-year-old, like, dialogue. Because regardless of CW, television, whatever, I see adults, and they're saying adult things. This...
Are they?
Yes.
You know what? I'm going to start bothering. Even though I said this before recording, where I say I don't like to watch things in clips. All right. I'm going to go on my mission to bother the hell out of you and show
no.
Of where
we're
they sound completely ridiculous.
We're going to... Let's... New tab. YouTube. Let's go. Like, I can do this all day. I have no problem. YouTube. What do you want to look up?
Wait, you're going to put a clip on?
No. Like, which part are you talking in particular?
No. I have to see the show.
Okay, then.
But what saying...
I'm reading this book right now, and Adam Strange, to me, sounds like a four-year-old talking to Bendis's brain is so big.
Dude, and I think you're so clouded by your hate by...
No.
I see this stuff all the time in every other comic that we read.
I could read other comics, and I can see the difference in dialogue. Now,
I understand, but in terms of you saying a four-year-old?
Yeah.
A four-year-old. I'm hearing a four-year-old. You've never, in like the 8 months that we've been recording, have you never critiqued someone as harshly in another book when we have seen some massively cheesy stuff the way that you will go on this book? And I get it. I mean, hey, if that's your shtick, I get it. Like, hey, Kellerman absolutely hates...
Don't get me wrong.
Kellerman hates the Patriots. He'll go after the Patriots.
Don't get me wrong. We've had some conversations about Snyder's Batman being weird in Justice League, but you chopped it up, and we both chopped it up, to his influence being the Justice League Unlimited TV series, which is for kids. So I'm like, okay, I can kind of get that. I don't like it, but I can get it. We talked about Tom King's dialogue. You know, the really big one was with Gotham Girl when she was fighting Solomon Grundy, and I think... It was issue 76 or 77. And it was...
Yeah, when she was saying like...
And she was going on. And we said it was very Bendis-like. I get that. Then, jump forward to Batman 80... Was it 84? 83?
Okay.
With Bruce and Catwoman doing the whole fight with Bane... I said that dialogue was a little weird. And then we talked that out.
Now, weird, and then Bendis' brain is so small, I'm not even going to call him by his name. I'm going to call him Cancer. Those are two completely different things. Like, I understand. We're all critical.
When I notice that an individual is literally changing these things with a hero that shouldn't be changed... And doing really stupid things with these DC books, then yes, I'm going to say that. I'm going to say that.
So why didn't you say that about Batman 84?
Batman 84, I said that it was dumb because of the timeline stuff. and I hate time travel.
No, no, I know, but I'm talking about as harsh as you are with this. I mean, there's a correlation to it. That's all I'm trying to say. I mean, like, if it's going to be a B, I mean, I say stuff are dumb, too. I mean, all the time I say things are dumb. But I'm talking about in terms of just how harsh you are towards this, it seems to me like, okay, the common denominator is this, but we see the same exact things, but in the other books, it's just, oh, it's dumb. Oh, yeah, it bothered. Okay, it's dumb. Here, it's like, we're going to harp on every little small thing. I mean, I think there's a connection to the hatred of Bendis that I think it just, I don't know. It just seems like, wow. Because, I mean, I remember in the past, we read a book on Bendis, and you were mad because during a fight, he was looking at Supergirl and like, Jonathan fighting and being like, wow, it's nice to have family again. But you're like, nobody would ever do that in the middle of a fight. And in comic books, they're literally doing that all the time. Superman's literally looking at his alter ego, who's this mysterious Clark Kent, while he's holding Doomsday's forearms. That was Dan Jurgens. And there was not, like, this crazy, dude, the guy's fighting Doomsday, the guy, the entity that killed him.
No,
and
see,
no one's bashing
in the beginning
the fact
of
that he's talking to in a
in
tunnel.
In the beginning of Rebirth, that stuff was in the midst of a fight, and he was thinking critically. This stuff is, oh, I have a family again. The House of El. This is so great. Oh, look at John having so much fun. Yeah, he's great. Oh, and look, there's my cousin.
See, yeah. It was like, it was one thought bubble.
It was two,
but
it was,
but again,
it was two
but
pages.
Look at the tone.
It was two pages. Or two panels, whatever, because you showed...
No, it was one page in a little box. Because
you showed John getting licked by Crypto, and then you showed Kara fighting. There was two different panels.
But two panels on one page. That's what I mean, one page.
It doesn't matter. That's two panels that you could be doing something else.
Other than Superman, the most empathetic person in the DC universe... actually being like, wow, like you're not going to reminisce even in the midst of your worst times if you actually see some hope, which is what people look for, and you're actually seeing like, wow, family, you're going to be like, I don't know, man. I honestly think it's just this book. I mean, we can keep on going.
I mean, we can.
Because to me, I think the best, you wanted to quit on page 14. I think the best page in this book was issue 10, page 10.
Oh,
when he revealed himself to Perry.
Page 10 is the only... page 10 is the only reason why I can possibly say this is a good book. Because of this only page.
I don't know, man. I even think that the reveal with Jimmy was consistent.
The reveal with Jimmy was so stupid because he pulled the rug underneath himself with the Lois page next. Saying,
yeah, but
so,
thing with Jimmy,
and then she because he reveals it to Jimmy.
Well, you have to remember that in New 52, he revealed himself to Jimmy. If the same thing happened again without a small twist, right now you would be ripping your work your shirt and twisting your nipples on how pissed off you would be that Bendis did the same exact reveal. So now there's actually a small little twist to it. There was a twist. If Superman actually had this little hallmark moment where he actually wanted to be the one to reveal it, you would be actually crucifying him.
It doesn't matter because the way he did it, way in saying, Lois is saying, oh, it's her secret, not Superman's. So she has the right to whoever she knows to tell his secret without him knowing, because it's her secret to tell. Is it her secret to tell? Is it her secret? Does it
semantics.
No. If we're going to the truth of the matter with what this is about, with what Bendis is trying to get everybody so emotional about, is this her secret to tell?
I guess a surface level, no.
No. So he pulled the rug out from underneath himself That was horrible pacing. That was horrible to do. Because it
I mean, I can buy that.
It diminishes the purpose of him revealing his secret. And it just says, oh, Lois can do this all by herself without Superman doing it.
I think that this is more that she already knew that Clark was going to do it, so this is just her.
Did she know that he was going to tell his secret to General Lane?
Probably not.
No. But this is who Bendis thinks Lois is. Somebody who doesn't care. Somebody who can just say whatever because it's Lois. But this is a relationship between Lois and Superman that we have known for years. And I know with what we've been given for 80 years since the time I've been reading for 20 years of comics here and there. I didn't start collecting until New 52, but or a little bit before. But like he is doing this to himself. He is writing.
Are you telling me that you really believe, knowing Lois, go by every single depiction, movies, comics, cartoons. Do you not see this being something that she would do? Because I 100% believe that this is the kind of thing, knowing within the boundaries of what she knows with her and Clark and what their relationship is, and knowing that Clark would be.
And
do you honestly believe, with Jimmy, who has almost died with her countless times?
I believe that she would have, with Clark's permission. She did it without Clark's permission. Because
I don't know. I think that they know each other.
No. Let's
that they would do it even without the permission.
Let's equate this to something that's going to trigger a lot of people, and I do apologize, but I saw this instance depicted by another reviewer that read this before. They said that this is not so much a coming out story, but they related it to it because they had an emotional attachment to coming out as gay. Now,
okay. Do
you think that somebody who is about to tell majority of the people in their lives that they are gay, that they are okay with somebody else saying, hey, this person's gay, but he's going to try to tell you this, just play it off and make it goofy?
I would say in that regards, no.
No.
But those are singular stories.
But
you can't relate. I can't relate. I don't know that person's story.
No. We're going by Clark and Lois, who are married. You're right. But I
don't even think that's a fair comparison.
I think it is fair because I believe sharing a secret identity of a superhero is just as important as coming out like that.
Again, but there are so many other circumstances and so many other nuances that go with that I just... In a micro, yes, but in the macro, there's so much other stuff that are going behind the scenes that it's hard. Those are like case-by-case circumstances. That's just how many times has somebody told you a secret and then they don't say it and then you're telling somebody else or you tell your wife immediately? I mean, if anything, we're all guilty of doing something like this, and now we're dealing with a husband and wife. And a husband who wife, and especially a wife who's very witty, who's very snarky, who's very on her feet. She's like, no, this is my story. This is my secret just as much as it is yours. And I can totally see Lois doing that. I mean, we're all guilty of somebody telling us a gossip and then you're telling your friend, your other friend. I mean, and that's just that. I mean, if we want to go so superficial on that, then I can go count by count cases in regards to that. But this is something completely different.
I don't know.
In regards to this case. Now, yeah, I can relate in regards to the coming out, yes. But it would say, how would you feel? Okay, yeah, on a linear thing, if we're going that, yeah, bad. But there's so much more than just that surface, and I think that's what gets most of the people and the Twitterverse and just people get so overreact because they're looking at something in such a what you see on the surface, not knowing that there's so much more that goes into something like that. I can totally see Lois doing this with Jimmy.
It just felt off to me.
I think it's different if it was somebody else. Okay, you know what? The General Lane? Sure. That one, I think that's more of a... I don't know. Maybe she just couldn't handle it anymore. I don't know. That one? Okay, I can kind of see because General Lane is dangerous. Now, with Jimmy? I could totally see that. And that doesn't bother me at all. But we can keep going.
Well, he reveals his name right after that. And then he tells the history of Superman, which everybody knows, because in every continuity that I've read, even in New 52, which is the continuation of, we know this information. Mm-hmm. Superman's birth and travel to Earth was written in the Daily Planet. Everybody knows this, and Bendis is still trying to sell people that he knows Superman. That's all I got from this next page. And
well, I mean, yes, there's only Metropolis, but he's literally telling the world.
Yeah, he's telling the world. There's
bound to be someone that doesn't know his story.
Okay, there's bound to be someone. But this is also the Daily Planet. The Daily Planet ran this story years ago or months ago, however you want to think of how continuity is. Mm-hmm. The Daily Planet is a huge media source. They talk about it all the time. Daily Planet is something that is read around the world, not just around Metropolis. So, big news like that, I assume, gets around everywhere. So,
how would you have wanted him to start the speech? When you start a speech, do you not normal... Like, if you're doing a speech, if you hear a best man speech, you usually go back to a story that everybody knows. You do something that can relate, like, hey, okay, that's right, you know what, oh yeah, I remember you mentioning the parent. You reel them in with something that you've heard that you kind of remember, and then you reveal what's new. You don't just go, I am Clark Kent, journalist. No, you do something that makes you feel like, yeah, this is my story, this is where I've been, this is, I mean, that's normal. See, like, you're taking it as, like, Bendis, oh, wants to show his ropes that he knows Superman. I'm like, come on, dude. Like, like, that is, like, what is that? I mean, yeah. I mean, we've heard other people.
But
like Joshua Williams said, every issue of Flash since the beginning of time, my name is Barry Allen, the fastest man
alive. I'm not saying, yeah. I haven't been reading Flash for the past, like, 20 issues.
But that's not why you're not reading it. It's just, like, there's something that you connect, and that's, like, a connection point. Like, it's just, like, nobody starts a speech exactly in present time. Let's just get on with it. You're always doing something to warm up the people. If it's either a joke or something, it's normally something that softens and makes you, like, relatable. And this is him relating to the people that, yes, he's a god, but this was his story, and this is why he's like them.
Well, it didn't relate to me. So, I mean, you should
wear a red lantern
you
ring.
You see, you know, everybody reacting to it. You have the firefighter chief. You see people, the citizens of Metropolis. You see the Red Cloud. You see Atlantis, the Justice League. Batman, Young Justice, Leviathan, I'm guessing Blackgate, and Supergirl. And, you know, that, okay, I see people getting excited. I think that's a smirk on Batman's face. I'm not entirely sure. You see Wonder Woman being, like, scolding, because I'm sure she has the same idea that I have, that this is stupid. And then you see freaking Lex Luthor just transform into his regular self, which...
I didn't even know he can do that.
I'm assuming it's because of the Martian Manhunter stuff, which, if that was the case, then I think that he could have done that in action, where we're seeing freaking Lex Luthor and the Justice League, or the Legion of Doom and the Justice League fight when they're technically fighting at the Hall of Justice right now. So, continuity-wise, this is all jumbled up, and I'm not really sure where the hell they are.
That one surprised me, but I don't know, man. Lex looks awesome.
And I will say, not a whole lot of people caught that he transformed. Because the people that I...
Wow, that would be really...
The people...
Really?
Yeah, the people that I was talking to were like, why the hell is he normal again? Like, what are... But it's a super quick glance, because if you're just looking at these pages, all you...
Yeah, you can't tell that he looks like Silver in the first with the coffee mug.
Yeah, exactly. But...
Okay.
But here's my thing that I texted you. When I was done with the book, I texted you, if the citizens of the world are not demanding for every other secret identity to come out, then this is unrealistic. Because... Why is he doing it? Because of truth. Because of safety. Because he wants to be true with everybody else. He wants to be trusting with everybody else. This is the story that Bendis is attempting to write. Now,
okay,
the citizens are saying, okay, yeah, we trust you, Superman. You're so awesome. We trust you, Clark. Yeah, we can call you Clark now. Awesome. Yay. There's no need to call you Superman anymore. Awesome. Clark, you're great. Now, I need every other superhero's name, or I'm not going to trust them.
Well, I think that with... See, I'm taking this story as what it is, and I loved it. Now, what's the important part, which is where Bendis has been struggling, is that this is clearly a new jumping on point to what's going to go on. And we know that Bendis has a thing, has a way of dragging. Now, we've already been teased when the truth is revealed with Superman 19, and it looks like absolute chaos. I don't remember what the cover looked like, but I know...
It was a destroyed Daily Planet.
There was what?
It was a destroyed Daily Planet.
Okay, a destroyed Daily Planet. Yeah, okay. So, we'll see what the aftermath is. We don't know exactly, and maybe what you've just mentioned, that could potentially be something. I don't know. At least at the beginning, normally writers at the start know exactly where their vision is, and you tend to see in the middle of their runs is when things get a little wonky. We'll see if this... I mean, have thought it's been wonky since the beginning. I have slowly been going more where, okay, the books are not as strong as how I liked them in the beginning. We'll see what happens with this reveal, but it clearly shows that there's going to be huge consequences because of this reveal. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, if people don't demand to see Batman's identity or the Flash's identity and things like that, I don't think it's realistic. And, I mean, because something like this, you need implications that are going to be more... Because he showed it with the splash page, that this is affecting the entire world, if not the entire mm-hmm. galaxy. So it needs to affect the entire world and this entire universe of books. And if it doesn't, then it's unbelievable, and it was a waste of my time.
Clay, I want you to know, I still love you, man.
Okay.
Just a little bit. I mean, I do want to just, you know, slap you in the face right now. I do love you.
I am saying this book was a waste for me. Like, it had nothing to add to what Bendis has been attempting for a Superman story. Because I still don't know the ending of the last three that he tried to start.
No, I just agreed that his execution, but I'm going by, if I'm doing like a standalone, I thought, even though, yes, and I even mentioned, I'm like, look, the Adam Strange stuff is really going to annoy you. I feel like I kind of know what are going to be your little ticks and what, you know, whatever. But, okay, like, my thing is, like, where is he going to go from here? Because that's where things have kind of been failing. But we'll see.
What book do you want to go
into
next?
Let's go to something that we don't understand. The Batman's Grave. I have no idea what the hell's going on in this book.
I am right there with you. I was like, you know what? Last issue was a little confusing with there being...
I liked it, though. It was fast. Just a cool chase scene, but at the end it was weird.
And I think that is the problem. Now, I don't know, and I'm not going to... Now, see, I could talk as much crap to Bendis, because I will say I have a bias of hating Bendis, and I'm okay with that, because he's ruining a great hero. But I don't know how old Warren Ellis is, but I feel...
I would say they're in the same age.
I feel like Warren Ellis is like, you know what? I have this much story to tell, and I don't want to get into the details. So, Brian Hitch, why don't you tell the rest of the story? Because...
I'm going to go right now. Warren Ellis age. I think it said 51.
51. Okay. Because there is...
Grant Morrison's 59?
Wow.
Jeez, a loo. Now.
Wow.
Now we're going to Bendis. All right, keep going.
75? 102?
He's 52. Look at that. There you go.
So, you were right on. Same age. Almost. But there is a point here. So, we get the back and forth banter of Alfred and Bruce. And once again, I read this entire thing. I read the entire thing between Bruce and Alfred like twice, and I still don't know what the hell's going on.
No, I think it's just, it's like a battle of wits, but honestly, I don't like this Alfred.
Yeah, I don't...
If I have this Alfred, I'm perfectly fine with his neck being snapped. I mean, that's horrible. How's that for a hot take?
See,
I mean, I don't get it, man. He's just... He's too witty. Just like, oh, just going after capitalism.
I was going to say, he's trying to get those like small little jabs in at Bruce. And it just feels weird. But at page 8, well, technically, because we see the two covers, I think this was technically page 6.
Yeah, I think digitally. If you're reading digitally, it'll be page 8.
Yeah, so page 8 until page...
It was like 15 16. Or something like that. 15,
16. So 7 pages is nothing but a fight scene. Again, so last
collecting them checks, man.
Last issue, we had 12 pages of a fight scene. This time, we get 7. And I don't know who this guy is. He's not recognizable from my end. I have no clue who this guy is. I think he's a new player in Gotham. But Batman is investigating this manor, this mansion. And as soon as he gets into the library or the study or whatever you want to call it, this dude jumps down, freaking clotheslines Batman onto the desk. They tussle, they throw each other. Freaking Batman or no, this other guy throws like a smoke grenade or whatever, but also with a regular grenade and then blows up the freaking study. And then Batman is back into the Batcave. And then freaking...
But before that, he was able to see that the guy was containing like these orbs.
Yes.
Like in a backpack, and Batman was able to grab one of them before...
Yes.
Before, you know...
Leave. Yeah, and he's studying it, and this orb is actually think of an Alexa, of like a house thing. So this is a Luther or Alexcon. This is a Lexcon.
Yeah,
and you know, even freaking Bruce said, "Oh yeah, us at Wayne Tech were trying to do the same thing, but he came out with it first, and it was better technology." And Alfred was like, wait, you tried to put computers and cameras into every house in Gotham or in everybody's homes? And Bruce kind of just like smiles, and Alfred's like, of course he would. And
Lucius Fox would not approve.
Yeah, he wouldn't. But I will say that is something Bruce might have tried. I think it's a little over the top because I don't think he has that much distrust in all of humanity, but you know, then we see that Alfred has a little bit of a background in atomic science.
Is that like, yeah, okay,
and you know, they're trying to find this compound, and
because it's some sort of like a hallucinogen,
yes, some sort of drug, pill, whatever. But then we get the same thing as we got in issue 1. Bruce imagines himself as this person that was in this mansion. And he quickly changes to that person. And it was a very interesting way of, you know, just looking back at the scene of the crime and everything else. And I will admit, that's very clever. I will give Warren Ellis and Brian Hitch that. That's very clever. I like it.
It feels very. I don't know if you ever saw the TV show Hannibal.
Yes.
It felt very. I forgot the guy that was always trying to go after Mads Mikkelsen, but he had like that complex where he can see the scene of the crime and he can like tap into like what the serial killer was thinking and all that kind of stuff.
And it's also very Sherlock. To be completely honest, if you ever watch Sherlock, he does the same thing.
Okay.
But then the book ends, and I still don't know where the hell we're going. This is issue 3. This is a technically normal-sized book. It's 22 pages. And I want clarity, dude. I want clarity so that way I can enjoy this book. Now, I will say, Brian Hitch, really spot on with...
I love his Bruce.
I enjoy his Bruce. I enjoy his fight scenes and everything else, but it doesn't... Like, it doesn't give me context for the story. Like, I can... If I wanted this, I can go buy a Brian Hitch art book. I'm not sure if there is one, but I could ask and be like, hey, Brian Hitch, can I have an art book? Pay with whatever money, and then just have pages and pages of this. Yeah. I want story. I want to be, like, I want to dive in.
Well, that's the thing. Normally with books, I mean, the first book kind of reels you in on something that's interesting, and then number two is usually, like, an issue two or a three. It's kind of, like, where you get into the heart of actually what the story is, and so far we've just finished issue 3, and we haven't gotten to that yet. So I think that that's kind of the confusion that we're dealing with here. But, I mean, that honestly is... It seems to be the... with a lot of the books this week. Because reading Far Sector... I mean, I think when we jumped into Far Sector, that was a book that from N.K. Jemisin and Jamal Campbell. Again, the book still looks gorgeous.
It is a gorgeous book.
I still love this book. But this is a book that I still don't get... I mean, I kind of liked the first, like, two panels. It looks like if they were trying to do, like, a little recap story.
Let me just say...
But I'm not...
I had to get Google and YouTube to help me pronounce her name.
Sojourner?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I had no clue what that was. Sorry, that was my phone. But it... To go from where we ended issue 1... And to start off in issue 2, in The Matrix, she is talking to somebody.
It seems like if it's fourth wall breaking, because you got a lot of fourth wall breaking in the first one, when she's like, oh yeah, no, because it kind of, well,
was
maybe
she,
not necessarily
was she,
us, but it looks like she's talking to a shrink. I think we thought maybe she was talking to, like, John.
We thought that she was either talking to another Green Lantern or the Guardians, pretty much explaining what this is. Now, I will say this. This, and we discussed it very minorly, and when you were off on your vacation, I talked a lot about 5G. She is rumored to be the 5G Green Lantern. The only problem is, this book does not feel like it's in continuity at all. And it's because...
And with it being in the Young Animal imprint... I kind of feel like it's not, and it's just going to be...
But see, this is Young Animal Black Label, because the F-bomb is said, like...
That's right, when she was falling. That's right.
Like, plain as day. But this book here, I feel like, is... Man, I don't even know what the... Like, so I understand, you know, the... Let's go back briefly to the conversation we were having with Bendis. Bendis was... trying to do something new but familiar. This writer is trying to do something so new and so alien-esque because that's what the concept of the Far Sector is. I think that is the worst thing to do with this type of character because we have no background.
There's got to be a healthy.
Yes, we have no background on this character in particular, which I'm okay with. I want to learn more about her, but you need something familiar surrounding her so that way.
Which is what worked with Naomi.
Yes,
Naomi, you at least got Superman.
Yes,
so you're like, okay, we have a connection point here. There's nothing to connect, so it's, you're just trying to, like, okay, let me learn to love this character. I don't get it.
It is literally, we are going out, it feels like we are going outside of the DC universe to read this book.
Yeah, I feel like I'm reading, like, an indie. And the thing is that this book is now, in a way, it's kind of like the opposite of what we just read in Batman's Grave. Which is, here you're getting a whole bunch of action sequences in regards to this first murder that has happened in, like, 5 centuries. But this is actually, like, a murder of the murderer. And, yeah, you're getting all these sequences. You're learning a little bit more in regards to... It doesn't look like she completely has grasp of her powers. Hence, like, she knows she can fly. But in that moment when she kind of broke concentration,
she can't focus on flying, yeah.
Exactly. So it's like, in this moment, you're now getting a whole bunch of action when you're, in a way, you're supposed to be paying attention to the action, but there is so much either live dialogue or inner monologues going on, and then there's even, like, dialogue in regards to, like, who is she speaking to? Is this us? Is it the Guardians? Like, we don't know. That it's just a cluster bleep of the mind.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things that I'm kind of just like, you know what,
It's very confusing, you know.
I mean, it does have an interesting, you know, like the cliffhanger, okay, with the mysterious dude that he's met, you know, kind of like in this little club, and you're seeing him dancing, and he wants to talk about the murder. It kind of makes me think.
This guy was part of the council in the very first issue.
Yeah, I'm forgetting which one, though, because they were like the At-Ats.
The At-Ats, the Nas, the
I don't know.
Opel, Telly, I don't know.
but honestly, it's a completely different language. Besides the hair, it kind of looks like this, if the skin tone, I got to remember number one, but I don't remember him being, like, as dark as he was in this one.
I think he was.
Was it?
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know why. I think he looked a little different.
I think it was the play off of the color scheme and the background and everything else.
Could possibly be. But yeah, it's very vibrant, the colors.
One thing is that that person that was helping Joe in the first book, we find out that they attempted a relationship, and then it didn't go so well. Or not necessarily go so well, but, you know, they said that it wasn't going to work out. It was mutual, but they are still, it looks like they're living together, and she's teaching her a little bit more about the Far Sector and, you know, the way of life and mm-hmm. everything else. And we learn that all three species that she is working with in this one planet or whatever, that they are in peace, but they are three different species that just eat each other. That was one of the big things that I got from this, is that they eat each other to survive, but more so for respect. And that is weird. Like, because at one point, one person had said that she smells delicious, and the person that she's living with is like, oh, well, you should see that as a sign of respect, but also remember that he wants to eat you. And so it's just very weird, and like, I completely understand the concept of alien. Don't get me wrong. I completely understand, and I understand that they wanted to bring something new to the DC universe. Unfortunately, I just don't think it works out with this book. It doesn't.
No, I'm with you. I don't know. I am to that point right now that if it wasn't because of this reveal that she's potentially going to be the Green Lantern, this would be the issue that I would just drop.
Yeah. Probably.
But it's kind of like, I feel like I need to kind of know a little bit more of this character so that I don't want to, like, quit the Green Lantern book, because I'm not familiar. I mean, also, that I don't quit a future Justice League book or something if she's going
to
be the Green Lantern.
I need her to react. I need her to interact with some of our familiar faces. Because if the first thing that I see of her after this is she's just hunky-dory with all of the other Justice League, like, how did she get there? Like, at what point did she become, you know, great friends with a future Justice League, you know? But let's go on to a book that I enjoyed, don't get me wrong, but the dialogue for this writer I felt was a little weird. Batman Detective Comics 1017, written by none other.
Was this a one-shot?
This was the one-shot by Tom Taylor. Now, okay. I truly believe that this was a test run for Tom Taylor. I think that...
God, I hope not.
I think... Well, after reading this, I hope not. I hope this is...
No, that's what I mean.
I hope that this isn't the direction that... Or the direction of writing that he wants to take with Batman. But I very much enjoy Tom Taylor. So,
oh no, for sure. To me, I took this as because it doesn't even make sense with the cover. To me, what this just tells me is that either Tomasi needed time, and for some reason, when it comes to Batman, it looks like Tom Taylor is the guy that does annuals, and that this was just an annual.
This very much and that felt
they,
like an
and
annual.
That they just plugged it and they just plugged it into a regular just to, you know, get the sales. Oh, Tom Taylor on Detective Comics. But this 100% red line, I'm like, dude, I just read an annual.
Dude, and also, let me just say, Tom Taylor put Spider-Man in the Bat costume. Like, this very much read like a friendly neighborhood Spider-Man. And I will say, this is one of the first books that we see Lucius Fox taking over the mantle of Batman's right hand. We see Lucius Fox a lot more in this book. He's there in the Batcave. You know, and he's encouraging Batman to, you know, do a little bit more of the Bruce Wayne stuff. There was this orphanage that this kid ran away from, and Bruce was like, oh, well, you know, kids run away from orphanages all the time. And Lucius was like, yeah, but this is his third time, and...
No, he's like the third kid.
Oh, he's the third kid. I thought he said the third
time. Yeah, he's the third kid, so that's what's made it suspicious, is that it looks like there's just recently, in like this past year, that there has just been now multiple children, like, either running away or have gone missing from this orphanage. Yeah.
So, the whole story is that Bruce tells Damian, hey, I got a mission for you. You need to look for this child while I take care of Gotham. And eventually he does. I think it takes a total of like 2 or 3 weeks. And Robin finally finds him. They put him in the Batmobile. He says, you know, he was out there looking for the other kids. And, you know, he becomes unconscious near, like, in the middle of the car ride. They take him to the hospital, but he ends up dying. Hypothermia. Mm-hmm. He froze, basically. And Bruce figures it out. He finds out what's going on. He goes back to the orphanage, and he tells the guy in charge, you know, hey, there was a child missing, but not just one child. And he, like, circles one of the kids, the main kid that started it, the whole thing. And he's like, oh, by the way, the police are coming. And he just punches the crap out of the guy who that runs the orphanage, and the police come, they get him, and, you know, Bruce tells Robin, you know, hey, you know, we may not have our suits on right now, but this is my orphanage. These are my kids. I am responsible for them, and I have failed them. And
I liked that in the beginning of the story, they did show that flashback on Bruce as a little boy and how important this meant to Martha. Yeah. And why is it that they do this? To give children, to have, you know, like, because all children deserve to have the life that they have. So I think that that was the good connection point to make the rest have you be interested in. I was like, okay, Like, I get it. And it, you know what? It's nice to see a little bit of, you know, more Bruce Wayne. You don't see much Bruce Wayne, so it was nice to see.
We haven't really seen a whole lot of Bruce Wayne in Tom King's run, or in Justice League, you know, or technically
honestly, it's really everywhere. Just been Snyder at the end, like when he didn't know who he was.
Yeah. But I will say, the part of dialogue that I didn't really enjoy or that was kind of confusing is his back and forth with Damian. We see this very much with the different writers writing Damian. Sometimes he's a jerk, sometimes he's a little bit nicer. But just the back and forth that Damian had with Batman when they first interacted in this comic just felt a little off. I'm not really sure if you got that.
I did.
But
I also saw, even when he was in the Batmobile with Miguel, I saw a more like sympathetic.
Yeah, yeah, I saw a more sympathetic Robin, and I'm totally down with that. Now, let me say, you know, we do have two other missing children in the orphanage. If this was a test run for Tom Taylor, I think this story would be a little bit interesting for, you know, something to keep going in the background of the Detective Comics to try to find these children. Maybe
it would actually live to the title, which is Detective Comics. Yeah.
And
so
I would be okay with that. I would be okay with him trying to investigate who is taking these kids and what organization or who, whatever it may be, what bigger plans they may have for these kids. And it would, you know, turn into this big conspiracy. I think that would be kind of cool. I enjoyed the art. I think it could have been better. But for this type of story, I didn't think that they needed, like top artist to be on there. So
yeah, I kind of like a little bit more when it comes to, like, just grounded stories. I kind of like a little bit more of the... And I think it's just because of my fascination that I've just been getting more and more along the years with indie books,
mm-hmm.
that I've started to learn and love, like, these rough around the edges, kind of looks a little indie. I kind of like these more subtle approaches. Because a book like this would be really weird if it was like a Tony Daniel. Like, that just doesn't make sense.
Yeah, for sure. But...
So, I dug it.
Let me just say, Batman Curse of the White Knight, number 5, was insane. And I'm going to skip to the head a little bit. I'm gonna skip to the end a little bit and say, I think this... Because he already announced... Sean Murphy already announced the title for his third volume. I think that's the third. I think that's the end. I think it has to be the end because of what happens.
Yeah, it's like his own little. It's his own little trilogy.
I hope it's the end because of what happens at the end, and we'll talk a little bit more when we get there. But let me just say, both covers for this book still continue to be super awesome. They're both done by Murphy. I love that Batwoman cover or Batgirl cover. But we open up with the funeral of Jim Gordon. It got me to remember that we lost Jim Gordon. Very, very sad.
R.I.P.
And, you know, we are listening to this news reporter talk about how much of a great man he was and how much he brought to Gotham, and that he was basically the White Knight of this city. We see that Barbara is in a wheelchair, so we assume... What we assumed last issue was correct, and she is, in fact, paralyzed from that knee to the back that Azrael gave her. And Bruce is missing at the funeral. He is, in fact, doing some scuba diving, finds a St. Dumas grave underwater. But he goes back to the GCPD, talks a little bit about what all of this is about. What the history of St. Dumas means for Azrael, for Gotham, and the fact that his background, his history, was basically, you know, just thrown to this whole, you know, lie of the Waynes.
Yeah, actually, that little story there actually reminded me that I forgot that they, like, appointed, like, Montoya.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, Montoya, that's right. Because it kind of brought me back to, like, why Jim and... But I was like, yeah, I forgot about Montoya being in this book, which I like.
Yeah. I love their designs. A lot of people don't like the SWAT look and the like backwards hats and all that stuff. I love it. I love the purple that she has on. But
I mean, that is kind of like, if you look at like SWAT, like in movies when they try to portray him, or even like if you saw like Zero Dark Thirty and you're seeing like Chris Pratt's team, like the ones that take down Osama.
Yeah.
Like, they all look like the badass Black Ops kind of people that they're, like, you know, the cool beards, the backwards hat. Like, I can kind of see, so, like, that doesn't really bother me that
much. Yeah.
Maybe it's not, maybe not realistic, but in terms of this medium,
yeah,
it looks better.
For sure. But Batman goes to visit Harley. And you see the kids, and he tells her, hey, you need to go talk to Joker to go see Jack. You need to get Jack to tell you what was written on that wall, where the Joker was born, basically. And he's like, and she says, well, I can't do it alone. You need to be there with me. And he says, well, I can't be there, but you won't be alone. You'll have your kids, which I think, Batman, that is the worst idea ever. Why would you bring children to Arkham Asylum? You know? But she goes to Arkham Asylum. I believe it's Arkham, right? Yeah, New Arkham. Yeah. It's the New Arkham.
Yeah, New Arkham, New Arkham.
Because they transferred all the inmates in the last book, or at the beginning of this one. I can't remember which one. But, you know, Joker is, you know, just being the, you know, the jerk that he is to Harley, and how, you know, she's worthless and all this other stuff. And she says, fine, if Jack's not going to talk to me, I'm going to leave. I love you. And all of a sudden, Napier comes out of nowhere, man, and says, I love you too. Nuts. And I was like, oh my God.
I was like, oh God.
That's so awesome. He's back.
Yeah.
But we get a little bit more background on Azrael from the GCPD. We learned that a little bit more about his posse, his other two mates. But we jump back to Napier, and he is able to recollect what Joker has seen. You know, because Joker can see what Napier can see, Harley said, well, maybe it works the other way around as well. So Napier remembers the flaming sword, and he barely remembers the wall, and he's able to kind of see it, but it doesn't show it. And he says, hey, I can tell you what it means, and I can tell you what it is, but you can't tell Batman. It's going to break him. And we see Azrael fight this, well, not fight, but what is her name? Ruth, right? Did we?
Yeah, she's like the Amanda Waller type.
Yeah. Yeah, and she is the one that is, she's among the 1% of Gotham, and is like, hey, you need to give us the names of everybody, because she wants to be in control. She is very much an Amanda Waller type character, and Azrael's like, yeah, no. Without that, I am nothing in this whole plan, so you're going to still work with me. And all of a sudden, Bane comes out of nowhere. Bam! There's a little bit of a brawl. I was not expecting what comes next. Were you expecting this?
When Bane got decapitated?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was amazing.
It was. Dude, so I thought, like, oh man, Azrael's gonna break his back. Like, Bane is gonna break Azrael's back, and that's why he's gonna get the mech suit. Because we do see a glimpse of it when talking to that Amanda Waller character. And I'm like, oh man, you know, this is the reason why he's gonna start wearing that. No. He beats the crap out of Bane, holds him by his little tube of venom from the back of his head, and cuts his head right off. Clean off. And then he sets fire to the Amanda Waller character, Ruth. Mm-hmm. And we see Bruce and Harley come out of New Gotham, and they drive away. But what they don't notice, and what we see, is that the guard's neck is slit. And there's blood trickling down his mouth. And then we see the giant massacre, and the reason why there cannot be any volume 4 of the White Knight, because every villain in Gotham is literally dead.
Yep.
Azrael goes on a killing spree, killing everyone. He kills freaking Crocodile. He kills the Penguin, he kills Two-Face, he kills Nygma, he kills freaking...
You got Croc, you got Ventriloquist.
Who's the little girl? I don't know who the little girl is. Is that a callback to the animated series? Because I saw somebody say that, but I'm not sure.
See, at first when I saw the hat, but then I was like, oh, that's probably the Ventriloquist or like Dollman. I don't know why, but I thought when I saw the hat, it was like Mad Hatter, and that was just like his version of like Alice. But I'm not, but I'm, you well, know, that's, I'm not,
that,
honestly, I'm not
that
sure.
That is the Ventriloquist right there.
I know, but Mad Hatter would be the one that's like, but I just saw the top hat
with
Ventriloquist, so I thought that was the Mad Hatter. So I initially thought that was like maybe his version of Alice.
Yeah.
But I honestly, I don't know.
But then Joker says, oh, you're cleaning house. And
how'd they let you pass security?
Yeah. And he says, oh, they did let me because I'm Batman.
And he's in that mech warrior Batman suit, which looked, that's one of the coolest splash pages I've seen.
Oh, yeah. I love this splash page.
And, I mean,
you see,
just like, I think it's Jim Lee that's really good at drawing water. There's something, like rain.
Uh-huh.
Like, he's really good at that. Sean Murphy, he's pretty good at, you know, fire.
Dude, the way he draws that sword is so beautiful. I absolutely love it. And he has teased that there is going to be a sword fight at the end of this series between Batman and Azrael.
I can't wait, man.
I'm ready for it.
I love this. I absolutely adore this story. And I'm just so happy that we can end the show in such a harmonious way. Because, you know, harmony. What's a better way to speak some harmony than being part of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network? Where if you just go to nerdylegion.com, check out all the other podcasts for all your nerdy delight. But yeah, just go there. If you click on podcasts, you can kind of see our entire umbrella of all the shows that we've done, or even our past shows when we were still Nation of Nerds. Besides that, yeah, if you want, go ahead and, you know, make sure to subscribe. iTunes, podcast, I mean, not iTunes, they don't call it that anymore. Apple Podcasts, you know, Stitcher Podcasts, wherever. You're an Android guy, so what do you use?
I use Pocket Cast, I will say, for those who do use it. It is great. You can go ahead and subscribe to us, and you can also set it to automatically download, so that way you will always be notified when we get a new episode. Please do that.
And our egos will be filled when we see the number go up.
Yes.
And with that, you can find me at Mark Reads Comics on Twitter, or if you want to speak with either myself or Clay together in harmony, CB_Legion on Twitter. And Clay, where can they find
you? You can find me on Twitter at FanboyClay, and then you can find me on Instagram with the exact same @. But with that, guys, I think we're going to end it. But I want to end it with some even better news, because I don't think Mark saw this on his phone. We just got a Slack message from our good friend Jimmy. He screenshotted some great news about George Jimenez, James Tynan, Batman, baby. Batman.
Oh, my gosh. So my next series is Batman. Dream Comes True with one of the... James the Fourth, one of my favorite. Ooh, Tomo Murray with Jimenez. That's going to be interesting art.
Well, Murray usually works, like, I don't know why. Murray is just connected to Batman. Like, I don't know if it's in his contract.
I mean, he's done, like, a lot of stuff with, like, Clayman. Like, you do see him a lot.
He's done Clayman with Batman. He has done, I believe he's worked with majority of Tom King's run on Colors. And then there's another guy that usually works with Jimenez on Colors, but I'm glad,
man. I gotta
Murray's
say, like,
Colors
normally,
is great. I love him on Colors.
Yeah,
so.
You know, I'm looking at this cover, and like, normally the way you see, because you know you see him in Justice League, I'm like, I can't see Jimenez work on Batman, dude. This cover. Man, this guy draws a beautiful Gotham.
Yeah.
And I love the light with, like, it look, because it looks like the outlines of the cape.
It's gonna be so flippin' sweet.
So what this is pretty much telling me is that in these 12 issues, it looks like there's gonna be a rotation. Because I know Tony Daniels starts it, But then I've already heard, like, in issues 89 or 90 or something, it's going to be, like, Gilliam March.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so I feel like this is just going to be a rotation of, like, many, you know, I guess with whatever the little mysteries that he's going to be trying to do, like, this horror stuff. Yeah. It's, I mean, so it looks like, yeah, everyone's going to be getting a small little piece of the pie, of the Batman pie.
I'm okay with that. As long as I get more.
No, I'm okay with it, too.
If I get more George Jimenez, I am okay. I am A-okay with that.
I'm just, because one of our buddies, Kevin, who's part of the Comic Book Legion, you know, fam, he is a very passionate soul, and he is not a fan of Clay at all. And I know, and it's funny, because when you read their messages towards each other, well, actually, I think Kevin has brought it upon himself to just ignore Clay, but
recently,
when they were, it's just funny, like, that these two were actually able to talk about something together and record, which was, I believe, some CW stuff or movie news.
Was,
I don't remember.
It was Disney Plus that we talked about.
Disney Plus. Okay. So now he's the one that's been really trying really hard on getting me to watch the CW stuff. But now he just finished writing to me exactly 3 minutes ago on a private message. And these are in all caps. Loved Superman 18. Wow.
Yikes.
All caps.
Yikes.
So I...
Yikes.
I'm going to... my goal is... I think he actually said that he stopped listening to the show.
You need to get him to listen to this one.
My goal is that if I'm watching CW, then I think he needs to put the big boy pants on and at least listen to the first... I think it was like 40
it was,
minutes.
Yeah, it was 40 Superman minutes. 18.
Yeah. See? We don't always get along. Now I'm going to curse him out when we hang up. But anyways, Clay... Pleasure as always.
Yes, of course.
And thank you, everyone, for your listening and for your continued support. And we appreciate it. It's a lot of fun when we do this and get to chat with you guys. But with that being said, we will talk to you guys next week.
Peace out.
Unless Clay quits. See ya.